It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo has the day off. She's got jury duty. So it's kind of like old times. Paul and I will talk about a video that Microsoft released that is just making him hopping mad, and there ain't no one to bang the gong to slow him down. We'll also talk about some dev topics, and there's a giant Xbox segment, of course. Windows Weekly coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 775, recorded Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. Shuffleboard at 3. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to deliver multi-layer security and remote manageability with the Intel vPro platform, powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Learn more at cdw.com/intel client. And by Melissa. Poor data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million every year. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records clean for free at melissa.com/twit. And by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. Hey, dozers, it's time for Windows Weekly, and it's just like the old days. Mary Jo Foley has jury duty. She's on a jury. Paul Thurrott is here, though, from Thurrott.com, and his book's at leanpub.com, and this is how the show was for many, many episodes. Right. Just you and me, buddy.
Hey, pal.
Hey, buddy, old pal. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
So you said she got on a jury. Do you know, is it federal? Is it state? Is it local?
It's got to be, I don't know. It's local. It's in New York. I know it's in
Richmond. SDNY?
I think she's trying terror cases.
If you live in New York and you're on a jury, you who knows? It could be anything. From a fender bender to,
Meanwhile, here in Podunk, I was supposed to be on a jury duty as well. And I called the day before because they never... They sent me reams of paperwork, but nowhere did it say what time I had to be there.
Or anything important.
So right. I called them. I said, what's going on with this? And they said, oh, no, you're supposed to call after 5:30, and then they'll give you the exact instructions. And I said, okay. I said, and I had called that number knowing this, not knowing that the time was tied to it, just to hear what it was like. And I did notice that certain ranges of numbers were actually excused from jury duty. So while I was on the phone... You know, Mabel or whatever on the other end says, hold on a second, talks to someone in the room and says, actually, you don't have to show up tomorrow. We're not calling jurors tomorrow.
Well, so thank you, Mabel. They should have let you know.
And then she put the cord back in another hole and went on to the next hole.
Number, please. This is the Lower Makanji Township.
Conk, 1, 2, 3. I know. It's something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad we have you. No one wants to hear me talk about Windows for 2 hours.
We had this weird, like, what if we both somehow have jury duty? I think if I had done it, it would have just been the day. I don't think I was getting on the next big murder trial or anything like that.
Yeah. I've been called a few times, but I've only got on one jury. That was a federal case.
Oh, boy.
And it was one of the, you remember Dateline had this To Catch a Predator series? Where they would set up a house and pretend to be teenage girls and try to lure people in. And they set up a house in Petaluma. And then you would come in, you would think you were, you know, the bad guy thought, oh, I'm hooking up with a 13-year-old. You'd come in the door and there'd be the Dateline host saying,
sure,
have a seat. And the cameras in your face would like to talk. And so... We saw the whole prosecution, the whole thing. We watched the videos, they set up the whole thing. I'm taking notes. I think it took 2 weeks.
Wow.
Sitting in the jury, taking notes. Yeah, I'm taking it very seriously, right? Writing it all down. Right. Then go crazy. It's time for the defense. Judge comes out, says, before the defense begins their case, I'd just like to say, it's over. I have ruled that this is entrapment. And the defense asked for a summary judgment, and I'm hereby ending this trial. Thank you for your service. Bye-bye.
Yikes.
So it's kind of a weird feeling because you've been really work. You know, I took it seriously.
This guy clearly also did something.
Yeah, right, but if you saw the whole story, I understand why the judge did what he did. It was just kind of a dumb kid. He was, I think, in the Coast Guard. And remember, they use adults to pretend to be teenage kids. There's no teenagers involved, sure. Obviously. No, and these adults act as they think, so it's not
the like Steve Buscemi in that movie. Like,
yeah. Hey, fellow kids.
Hey, other kids.
So, I think the judge did the right thing, to be honest with you. It was very much a TV show setup, you know? And I was kind of, I don't know what I would have done, but it's a little weird to go through 2 weeks of trial and then nothing. You know, you don't get any closure at all on the whole thing. And I did get my $15 a day, though, so.
In my case, it would have been $9 a day. That's when I got nervous. It was $9 a day, but if I was there 3 days or longer, it started to be $25.
See, there you go.
And I thought, you guys, you have no idea what my life costs.
It's not to make up for your loss. It's just...
Was it gas money?
Yeah, it's pretty much...
It doesn't even, that guy couldn't even buy lunch. Like, that's not even lunch money.
Look, it's our civic duty. I was happy to do it.
Happy not to do it.
Yeah, I know. Nobody... But this is why...
I was going
to
be like,
you don't ever want to have a jury trial in this country because the only people on the jury are people who weren't smart enough to figure out how to get out of it.
Yeah, and have time to kill. And
right. So that's why
busybodies.
I felt like, busybodies or, you know, that's why I was happy to do it. I think this is my civic
I'm
duty.
I'm nervous enough about connectivity on this boat, you know, like being forced to.
Okay, wait a minute.
Sit in a room.
Let me tell you right now. First of all, cruise.twit.tv, Paul and Stephanie and Lisa and I are going to Alaska June 16th through the 23rd. There's still room. Please sign up. But sure. There is no internet access, Paul.
There's got to be something.
There is no... there's an internet
connection,
but there's no internet. When you're sailing around, forget it. Now, once we're in town...
Yeah.
You can use the 3G, 4G, 5G available. Right, so bring, all your phones.
Okay. Yep.
Just so you, it is America. We're in Alaska. So, but I don't know if Verizon, T-Mobile, I don't know which one will work better. Yep. So bring whatever carrier you have as all
that's
of them.
That's going to be amazing.
I'm bringing a Verizon, T-Mobile, and Google Fi phone. Hoping one of those works. But that's going to be your really pretty – when you're on a cruise – the whole point is you're disconnecting from the world.
See,
are you going to be are you going to be posting and stuff? I mean, are you going to be working?
I don't know. Well, I mean, look, the way I think of this is, I do these home swaps like in the summer. I go away for 3 weeks, right? I don't take 3 weeks off from work. I still,
I'm a writer. I know.
I like to write. I like to, even if I can't get online, I'm still going to write
it. Nobody says you can't write.
Yes.
Okay. You're going to have to upload it when you get to town. But we're in town most days. There's only
So back in the 1990s, I would sit for hours in a room and write, and that content would sit on my computer. And eventually, it might head to a publisher.
Get a modem,
a book somewhere. But the past 20 years, whatever, 25 years, I write, it goes online. I write, it goes online. And you kind of get used to that. I don't know what you call it.
They have internet. Somebody's saying they have internet. I know they have internet. Yeah. They just don't have any speed because it's basically 2,000 people.
I won't be doing
people.
Live video. I get
No. It's 2,000 people using a T1, basically.
Sure.
So
it's also 2,000 people. Our crowd is all like tech people.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have 100 of us trying to watch YouTube. Yeah. And Netflix. Yeah. How come I can't watch my Netflix? But
I don't care about watching Netflix, but I would like to,
Have you ever been on a cruise ship before?
No.
Oh, nope. Okay.
No, this is...
You're a newbie.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll have to give you the whole talk sometime.
Is there like a towel snapping thing that has to happen?
No. But there are some... No. You're gonna enjoy it. I think you are.
No, I know I am.
It's very relaxing, very enjoyable. Beverages flow freely. Mm-hmm. But the internet is really, 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 really slow. You can get up, if you get up in the morning before everybody else, it's all right. You know, or late, maybe late at night. You want to use it when no one else is using it, I guess, is the rule. And again, we'll be close to shore a lot of the time. And
so this is like being at a CES hotel in the late 90s when everyone was, you know.
Yeah. They have a
killing the tiny connection.
They have Inmarsat. They have a marine satellite.
Yeah.
And that's their internet. There are boats. We're not on one of them, I don't think. Well, maybe we are. I don't know. But I don't think we are. That have high speed. Like Royal Caribbean, they have this thing called Voom. Vroom. And it's pretty fast, but I don't think this will be like that. I don't think
it's going to be interesting. It's going to be hard for me, but I'll get through it.
Yeah. Your stateroom has Wi-Fi, Scooter X.
Wi-Fi.
Yes. But we cannot guarantee.
It's 802.11b.
Yeah, we cannot guarantee.
I don't know if you have equipment that can even connect to that, but
you should think in terms of like you write offline and then you
then you
upload it.
I've gone through this.
You can email our stuff in.
Our first home swap in France in 2006-ish, the guy had some ancient ADSL thing that was really far away and really slow, and I would batch upload everything
like that.
At night, you know, it would go up overnight. And when I got up in the morning, sometimes it was still going. You know, it was really slow.
Yeah. Someday, you know, I mean, airplanes are starting to use Starlink. I wouldn't be surprised if ships starting to do something like that. But it's fine.
But even in planes, it's hard. You go over water. Like when we go to Mexico, you have connectivity over land. But once you get over the water, you get nothing.
So it's going to be kind of like that. It'd be spotty. I should have warned you.
No, you did. You've mentioned this many times. Okay. You've been very upfront about this aspect of it. But I've been kind of in denial.
The food will be good. The beverages will be good. The company will be good. And that's what matters. Yes. We're going to have a good time. Is Stephanie excited?
Yeah. She's less concerned about connectivity.
Obviously. She doesn't care. she's not working. Yeah. I hope. I hope she's not trying to work.
No, I mean.
You and Lisa can get up at 6 a.m.
Yep.
Go into the lounge.
Sure.
Because Lisa doesn't rest either. 56K
connection.
Yeah. Think of it like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a video from Microsoft. Yeah.
This is tough timing for me, Leo, because if Mary Jo was here, I feel like she could stop the insanity. But Mary Jo is not here.
There is no gong.
So I'm going to do my best because, frankly, I've already ranted about this so much. I haven't seen it yet.
Tell me about it.
This is horrific.
Should we watch it together, you and me?
Let me just prep it by saying Windows 11 is mostly fine, right? There are a lot of regressions. They've implemented a new start menu, a new taskbar. They're not as full-featured as the versions they replaced.
Yeah.
And they don't give you a way to go back. So if you're a power user or an experienced user of any kind and you have certain expectations, you know, there are things about Windows 11 that you'll find frustrating.
Yeah.
And you want to believe in your heart of hearts that there are people at Microsoft who really care
about it. Yeah.
And they're thinking hard about it. They're actually working on it. They're teaming up and getting in rooms and working, and they're solving problems. And then you watch this video, and it just makes you question everything that you think is important.
Now, let me just ask you ahead of time. This is not a tongue-in-cheek video that they're going to play at Comdex or something.
I'm glad you asked that. This actually plays very much like a College Humor parody video. This is, in fact, a real video from real Microsoft employees talking about how awesome the Windows 11 start menu is. And if you can get through this without coughing something up, I'll be impressed.
It's only a minute, so I'm going to try.
It's horrific.
Okay, let's watch together.
The process of designing is informed by research. There's a challenge of making sense of it.
You come into a design problem, there's always a blind spot there.
It's like Steve
Jobs. Really
easy
to design something that you like, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it will work well for everyone.
For us, we need to listen more than just do.
There are a lot of questions that we were asking. Should Start be left aligned or center aligned? Should there be a search box in Start? Should there be an all apps list? Is Start going to feel familiar?
He's looking out the window.
Let's let people tell us how they would want to put it all together. Here's a search bar. Here's the weather. Here's your documents. Here's your apps.
Now you tell us.
He laid those on the table, and it was really cool to see what all these different people were building.
Like, what order did they put them in? And, you know, some people thought the weather was important, but other people wavered on that.
And they were all a little bit different. But one thing that they had in common.
I'm wavering on that.
We always saw search files and applications together.
They were creating designs that match what we were already thinking about. And so that gave us a lot of confidence that we were on the right track.
Who's she talking to? She's not talking to anybody. She's talking to the wall. This is scary. The designers were just talking to the wall. They weren't talking, I'm going to paraphrase what I just heard. There were no people in there, just designers.
Let me see if I can do this. I got to adopt the same pose because they're looking up at something. I don't know what
it is. They're looking at the wall.
They're like, "Yeah, Leo, I don't use Windows, but if I did, I would imagine that what would be important to me." I don't understand a lot, I guess. I have a hard time with this one.
I'm wavering on the weather, honestly.
I'm wavering on the weather. You know, we gave them pieces of paper and told them to arrange their perfect start menu. Of course, they could only base it on the things we'd given them, so
right.
It was kind of a preordained thing. here's the thing. So, the look of the Windows 11 start menu is pretty, for sure. It is the most unsophisticated piece of software Microsoft has ever created. I keep using all the same examples, but there are two big sections, pinned and recommended. If you delete a row of icons from pinned, or you delete them all because you don't want any of them, the other thing doesn't fill in the extra space. It just leaves a hole. That's how dumb this thing is. It is really poorly designed. With regards to start search, by default, there are at least four ways to access start search in the UI. You can turn that stuff off laboriously, but you can't get rid of it entirely. I mean, they almost put the weather in the start menu. Like, what are you talking about? This is crazy. Like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. These people don't understand Windows or people that use Windows. And I don't think they care. You know, was this like a summer intern project or something that you did? Like, you gotta, I don't know.
There's a new book that that just came out about Apple.
Yep.
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. After Steve. And by the way, there's a new one by Tony Fadell as well that came out the same
time. Yeah, I actually want to read them both because I think they'll have a different take. The subtitle, How Apple Became a $1 trillion Company.
Company lost its soul.
And lost its soul.
Yep.
And it seems, at least I've only read the excerpt in the New York Times, but it seems that the centerpiece of this is Johnny Ive, the designer, becoming affronted that the accountants, that's how he called them, had taken over Apple.
Remind me what Tim Cook is again. Yeah, I'm not all the way through the book. That's accurate. Allegedly, it's also about Tim Cook, but it's mostly about Johnny Ive, right? And the close relationship he had with Steve Jobs and how they connected on a certain level and how Steve Jobs would never purposely lash out at Johnny Ive and how Johnny Ive could scale or take Jobs off of a cliff. He was the only guy that could do it. And they created a bunch of special things together, I think it's fair to say. On the flip side, I will say Johnny Ive and Jobs created a sense of form over function, which is something Apple critics would point out. You know, this thing is arbitrarily thin, but now it doesn't work properly. Or he was the guy responsible for the antenna thing on the outside, which Fostel went to town
The unworkable butterfly keyboard, the mouse that had the charging port on the bottom so you couldn't use it while it was charging, and on and on.
Yes. So this is very polarizing. There are people who idolize Johnny Ive. There are people who can't stand the kind of pukey British videos.
He was a brilliant designer.
Yep.
My takeaway is similar to takeaway this, which is designers overvalue their contribution. They really...
That's right. And I will put this in the context of something that maybe Microsoft people will appreciate a little bit more. I'm with you 100% of the Johnny Ive design thing at Apple. I 100%. We went through this with Metro, and it started with Windows Phone 7 series. And there was this weird thing where... And by the way, I know Metro dates back... You know, it was technically in Zune, the early version of Media Center, but... With Windows Phone 7, Microsoft came out and felt they had to over-explain why this was so awesome. Because this was made by designers, and there's all this white space. Even though you have this tiny little 3.5-inch screen where every pixel matters, we're going to chop off a third of it. But don't worry, we know what we're doing. We know better than you. We're designers.
Metro
is authentic. Metro is blah, blah, blah. And the thing I finally came out with was like, you know what? Two things. If you have to explain something this much, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You're just wrong. Because good design is obvious to anyone immediately, even if they can't express why it's good design. People will pick up an iPhone and be like, wow, this is a beautiful thing. Why? It's beautiful.
The word design shouldn't come into your head at all. It just works. It's nice. I like it.
You don't
it feels good.
Right. The other thing is, like, people who talk too much about anything, those are the liars.
Wait a minute.
Right?
Wait a minute. We do a two-hour podcast in which we talk incessantly.
No. But you asked me a question.
Yes.
Paul, are you buying a place in Mexico? Yes.
Yeah.
That's the end of that conversation.
You don't have to explain it.
I don't say, well, Leo, I've spent many years investigating different...
You don't make a video staring out the window.
It's not a monologue.
Here's how we thought about this.
Right.
Yeah.
So... the thing is, and then, you know, just general Apple versus Microsoft kind of mentality, form over function versus function over form, right? Microsoft has always approached things, or generally has approached things from more of an engineering standpoint. Yeah. They're engineer focused. A lot of times you would see software developers or engineers creating the UIs, which, you know, I think objectively is a bad thing as well, you know, no doubt about it. But this is an example of Microsoft putting the form first without really paying attention to the rich history of this UI, what people have done with it, what people expect of it, and how they will react when things that they expect to be there are just missing, and their only response can be like, no, you don't understand. It's beautiful. It's like, no, you don't understand. This thing is a tool. It needs to work, you know? And it does, obviously, it basically works. I mean, it does the basics, but, like, you know, as I pointed out, serious regressions and just immature, kind of unsophisticated lack of functionality that it seems more like a prototype than a shipping product. To celebrate this and these people in this video, to me, is an insult to the 1 billion people that use Windows.
No, but you don't understand. We had to make it like this. We thought a long time. You don't understand. That's kind of the subtext.
You don't understand. It is the subtext. And it really, like I said, it reminds me of the Metro stuff. I really recoiled against this when I loved Windows Phone. I was immediately on board with it. But the more Albert Shum and that design team came up, blah, 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 you know, just like talking about it. I was like, God, what are you talking about? Like inevitably, and this will happen with the start menu, inevitably they had to give up on all their white space design nonsense because everyone complained about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we can fill the screen now like you wanted, you pedestrian.
Oh, so ugly.
Yeah. You know.
What's wrong with Helvetica?
If you want to use Android, that's fine. I don't care. It's just, and this will happen with the start menu, will happen with the taskbar. You know, Windows 11, people are going to complain. People are going to complain. Businesses are not going to upgrade, and they'll ask why, and they'll be like, because you ruined it. Like, what, you know? And eventually they'll be like, okay. And, you know, I'm not saying we're going to go back to Windows 10. I don't mean it like that, but they will make concessions over time. That's how this happens, you know? And to make a video like this is so, this is Stephen Parker from Neowin wrote this. I don't mean to quote from him and not give him credit because he was the first. He was where I actually found out about the video. Described it accurately as tone deaf. And yes, that's exactly what it is. It's tone deaf. You're not reading the room. You don't seem to understand that the people who care about Windows enough to watch this insipid video are the very people you have insulted by making this video. You know? It's
we made it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, you may not understand why this is good, but, you know, suck it up. You'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
It's a higher plane of existence. You just don't understand it. It's like, someone doesn't understand something.
There's design. I love good design. I love designers.
Yeah.
They do, as a rule, I think they overvalue what they do, and they really look down their nose at non-designers for the most part.
Yeah.
So there's a designer, and then there's UI experts who I think are kind of somewhere in between engineers and designers, but they focus on UI. People like Jacob
Actually,
Nielsen.
My son was trained in this. You know, there's an emerging study that is between programming and design.
Yeah.
And it involves aspects of psychology.
Yes.
It involves accessibility.
Yes.
It involves all this different... It's that thing I was talking about. You don't let the engineer design the UI. You have to have an understanding of the wide variety of people in the audience and what their needs and expectations are.
That's right.
And you know, anyway, that's great. This was not something that was available to me growing up as a sort of course of study. We didn't understand this stuff back then, but... you know, it's hard for me not to just, I find these, their whole presentation style to be so frustrating.
I feel bad for them. I mean,
yeah,
they honestly, probably these people have their heart in the right place. They're trying to do a beautiful workable, usable, new windows. Mm-hmm. Honestly, there was a heavy burden on them because the only thing that changes in Windows 11 is the design. Yeah.
That's right. Well, here's the thing, though, Leo. There are decision makers at Microsoft who stand between them and the customer. See? So they can come up with their little fruity designs and blah, 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 whatever. But someone with a brain in their head should have said, is anyone concerned this thing doesn't do this stuff that used to people expect? And
it's a balance. You know, there's a balance.
It got pushed through. Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way about Windows 11 that retroactively writing this article series I've been doing, I feel about Windows 8, which is that if they had given this thing one more year and actually engaged in feedback and found what do users here's the thing we were going to do, but tell us what you need, you know? With Windows 8, what you eventually got was Windows 8.1 Update 1 or Windows 8.1.1, which is you can have the start menu if you want. There's a start button. Just kidding. You know, we brought all that stuff back. You know, you would have gotten to a system that was a little saner than the stupidity that they put out as 8.0. And, you know, Windows 11, that thing was in testing for 3 months. No one had any chance to provide feedback that actually made its way into the product. That's happening this year. There was no reason to ship this thing in October. You didn't meet the holiday season. You're not helping PC makers. Nothing happened. There was no benefit to it. You know when they could have used it is this year, because PC sales are not going to skyrocket this year like they did during the pandemic. And maybe a new Windows 11 version that actually meets people's needs would have been exciting and might have triggered some upgrades. You know, I don't know why they did what they did.
I think it's apocryphal. Henry Ford or somebody said, if I had asked what my customers wanted, they would have said faster horse. But there's got to be...
Yes, the original Steve Jobs. I got it.
Yeah.
But this is not... Listen, we're not inventing something new. We're upgrading something that is tried and true and is the central point of productivity for billions of people
every
single day.
This is a new...
We're not looking for... We don't need star-shaped screens. We don't need orbs flying in the sky. This is productivity. This is basic stuff. I don't mind it. I like the way Windows 11 looks. I do think it's prettier, more attractive, however you want to say it, than Windows 10. It's nice. I don't mind it. But the problem is everyone has this thing, you know, whatever it is. I always talk about this. Everyone has their thing. And, you know, for me, it's right-clicking on the taskbar, and it's like, I still do it, even though I know the answer to the problem. And I can't get to Task Manager. And I'm like, where? And I do it every day. It's hard to overcome what for me must be 20 years of muscle memory, you know. And we've gone through this. Like I said, Windows 8 did the same thing. And Windows 8 actually was categorically worse. I mean, Windows 8 was full of undiscoverable UIs with no help whatsoever to help you discover them, and people would accidentally click something and a UI would appear and like, oh my God, what's that? And then it would disappear and they had no idea what they did and they couldn't get it back. And, you know, Windows 8 was categorically, like I said, worse than Windows 11. It's not even close, but you know, it's 2022. This is what we're dealing with.
What they're trying to do is hard. It's a hard thing to do.
Why are they doing it?
Well, that's a good question. Do they need to do this?
I mean, so I think we keep going back and forth in this. You know, one of the things that we thought, and it made sense, was if we make the UIs of things similar, they'll be easier to use. Microsoft did this back in the 1990s, I think, with Office, you know, Word 6, Excel 5, whatever that was. Where they made the top-level icons and the toolbars and the menus all the same, the idea was if you used to Word and you knew where things were, you could turn on Excel or PowerPoint or whatever, and things would be in the same place. You'd be like, oh, look, I know how to use this application. What we learned late, that sounds like it makes sense. It doesn't make any sense. That wasn't based on any research. People actually can adapt to different UIs in different places and do different things, and they're fine. It works fine. For some reason, here we are with Windows 11, and we're like, well, this new start menu, it looks a little bit like your, you know, the screen on a phone. You know, it's like, it's thin. You can't resize it, you know, which people might want to do. You can't change how the icons appear, like if what you have in each section or whatever. It's like a phone, you know, you're like, yeah, it's like a phone. Except I'm using a 29-inch screen. That's horizontal, not portrait. And I don't need this thing to be like a phone. I'm not that dumb. You know, like I'm not, I shouldn't touch the screen. Like, are we really just doing the same mistakes over and over again? Which is the Microsoft story, I guess, you know, writ large. I don't know. I think we are. Anyway, I hope I didn't rant too much on this topic, but I just, it's so frustrating. The thing I will say, actually, let me add one more thing. This is just about me, really, is I overreact to things. I don't know, you probably never noticed that. And, you know, when you overreact to things, there's only a couple of possible outcomes, right? And unfortunately, I married a woman who is used to the way I am, and she'll, you know, sometimes I'll overreact to something. She'll be like, yeah, the reason I did that is, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And you're like, oh. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
That works with you.
I de-escalate immediately. I'm okay. Not an insane... Well, I am insane so temporarily, but I'm not an insane person.
I've learned not to say, which is one is okay. calm down. Not to you specifically, but just in general. Down, yes. Calm down does not work.
Yep. No, it never works. That's true.
I am of the... my general temperament is to always try to understand from the other side and say, well, there's a reason, yes. And do what your smart wife does. That had, in my relationships, has not worked.
right. But I would say if you look at there are two sides of an argument, one of them is this guy freaking out, and this other one's like a calm Zen Buddhist guy. The Zen Buddhist guy never really wins, right? Like,
no.
Because he's
no,
not.
No.
You know,
he's too cool.
He's too calm.
Yeah. Lisa says you always do the devil's advocate thing, and I said, well, right. You're right. Okay. So
yeah, but you know, sometimes Leo, though, if you freak out on something, here's the thing. Like in this case, I may whatever anyone thinks of the way I reacted, I'm right.
I think you are right.
Like
I think
here
you
we are.
Right.
It's a week later.
Yeah,
I have had time to digest this. I've had time to think about the way I reacted
off.
To it.
Yeah, a week later,
it still makes me mad. I'm still right about this. Like objectively, what these people did is terrible.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's not good to overreact. I don't mean it like that. but. In this case, I feel like it was warranted.
Yeah. No. I'm in agreement with you. I really am.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say is this is a hard thing to do. And
yeah, but why do it?
Then why do
well,
it?
Actually, well,
really,
okay, actually, yeah. Okay, let me answer my own question. The reason you do it is Windows 10 had the vestiges of that tile-based UI that started in Windows 8. And when you think about what live tiles were, the point of them was to provide you with at-a-glance information. So you didn't have to go into an app. You could see what your most recent email was, maybe what a social media mm-hmm. post was, photos or the weather, whatever. And it's a good idea in general, and it makes sense on mobile devices. You know, you pick up your phone, you look at the screen, you're like, oh, look at that. That's nice. I don't have to go into the app. On Apple, there's a little red one. It says, oh, I've got something's in the app. I guess I got to go in the app. You whack the mole. You go in the app, you look at it, you deal with it, whatever. So on a phone, I feel like the live tile thing made lots of sense. When they tried in Windows 8 to do a full screen thing where that was what was on the screen, so it was there, you could see it. You know, they tried to make it make sense. They gave up on that because everyone hated it. Windows 10, they stuck it in the menu. It didn't make any sense. Nobody used this stuff.
Here's the challenge.
Stopped supporting it.
Here's the challenge. I mean, I guess in an ideal world, you'd make it completely customizable. And then people can do whatever they want. The problem with that, of course, is that requires a lot of work, and nobody wants to do it. So then you do what Apple does, which is say, well, instead of giving you Apple's the least customizable user system I know.
Right.
And then they just say, well, we're going to figure out what the best way is, and that's how we're going to do it, and you're going to enjoy it.
Right. And if you can get yourself into that lobotomized state, you know, like honestly, no.
That's why people use Windows and Android, because they want to have some choice.
No, there are things about the iPhone I really like. I mean, even UI things where, like, for example, Android and Windows Phone had this concept of all apps. You could you pin things to a home screen, but all of your apps are somewhere else. So what you're seeing is a curated view of the stuff that's most important. But when you want to get to other stuff, it's in this list. On the iPhone, everything was just on the screen. That was all the apps. All apps are on the screen. People are like, well, you know, it's a few years have gone by. I have hundreds of apps. It's hard to navigate around. We'll give you folders. Here you go. You got folders. See? You can organize
things. It took them a decade.
Yeah, it took them. But that doesn't solve the problem. And so finally with, a couple of versions ago, they released this interface called, what's it called? I don't even know what it's called. It's sort of their version of all apps. You scroll to the right.
Yeah.
And you can now hide icons. They only appear in this thing. It's a weird view.
I never use it.
It's called App Library. So I actually do kind of use it, but here's what's weird about it. First of all, the default view is like these Windows Phone looking tile icon things that Apple does. You have no choice in the matter. If you want to, if you, It's just so weird. It's the weirdest UI. If you want to see the all apps list, you have to swipe down, and then you have to swipe up to get rid of the keyboard, and then you have to swipe down to go through. It's like the stupid. It's so Apple. It makes no sense. But you know, as I descend into this matrix-like serenity about the iPhone, I find myself just accepting it. Like I kind of like App Lib right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because you have no choice. Because you have no choice.
Maybe now, I need this melanin.
Honestly, Linux has you can make it look any way you want, from text on a black screen to all sorts of, you know, which is animated stuff. And the main complaint, complaint people have about Linux is I have to fuss with it too much.
I had someone argue to me on Twitter that Windows 11 having fewer customizations actually made sense from a support standpoint.
Yes.
Because
they know what you're going to, they know what you're,
they always know like, what's going to be on the screen because it's always
move your mouse to the lower left corner or whatever. Yeah.
We had a woman in our HOA recommend that everyone in my neighborhood get the same color mailbox.
Same reason.
And it's like, I guess, I'm actually trying to understand what the point of that
we
one
is. We want a nice, homogenized
but
look.
But you understand, the point is you there go are down people the street. Like that. Like, they actually believe this,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. But anyway, with Windows 11, they had, live tiles were going away. So, you know, we're not going back to the Windows 7 start menu, right? So I guess they took this opportunity to say people are using mobile devices a lot. Maybe we'll make it look like that.
It's a hard thing. I'm sure.
I guess. I don't know.
That the first iteration of any of these things, you're going to get all these complaints. They know that. And then you can slowly tune it to get it closer to what people want, right?
Yeah. Assuming that's what happens. You know,
right.
So what we've gotten so far has not been encouraging, right? With the taskbar, for example, a very small percentage of Windows users on Windows 10 or older will move the taskbar to the right or left or to the top. A very small percentage makes the icon sizes different sizes, which makes them smaller. A very small percentage used toolbars of any kinds. That was a feature that existed until now. So the Windows 11 the taskbar is brand new. Doesn't do much. It's a slab of whatever it is. I don't know. It doesn't have a lot of options, you know. I don't mind it for the most part, but, well, except for the right-click thing, right? If you right-click Windows 10 or any older versions of Windows, you're going to see like 25 options. You right-click in Windows 11, you get one.
Yeah.
And I'm just
so
saying,
that's a choice they're making. Maybe the problem
happy
is
medium.
They're taking people who are used to a more customizable environment
and
putting them more in the Mac kind of, you know, no customization. And that's a change in expectation, and it hurts. It hurts. It burns.
Yes. So on the Mac, as you know, the big solution there is to get third-party apps that can customize things for you, right?
They can't do a lot, though. Yeah. You know, I mean, your menu bar
Well, for example, like folder colors is a typical example.
Okay, you can do
For some reason,
colors.
Folders on the Mac are like blue. Like for whatever. Like,
you
okay.
can make them any color you want. That's fine.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that you can't, you know. So the next story, I think, let me just look at the list to make sure this is true. Yeah.
Before you get to the next story, we're going to take a break. So,
Right, but I just want to say actually speaks to a future where third parties will be able to take advantage of new capabilities to make this thing more customized.
I guess that's the way to do it, you know? To present to people a monolithic interface and then say, if you really care, there are ways to customize it, but you don't need to.
Yeah, Microsoft doesn't support it, it removes a layer of training necessity and yada, yada, yada. Like an organization might say, yeah, we want to buy this third-party utility because it does this thing we want, but we know it's not coming from Microsoft.
You think that's where they're headed? That's like really what they want to do?
No, I just drew that little connection to my head as we were talking. I don't actually think that's where they're heading. but it is, you'll see. We'll get to that. It's a possibility.
All right. I want to take a little break and we will talk more. Mary Jo Foley has the day off. I hope she's enjoying the exciting trial, which,
How
as it turns
she?
Out, is a lawsuit about making all your mailboxes the same color. So
exactly.
She could have benefited from this conversation. Wouldn't that be funny? The worst thing you can get is on a civil suit. oh my God, so
no,
boring.
The worst thing you get is someone did implement that mailbox thing and then someone killed someone else because they were so mad about
no,
it.
No, but that's what you want. You want a murder. That's always much more interesting. Just trust me on that. Our show today brought to you by Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. In today's bumpy hybrid work world, it is bumpy, isn't it? Half of Apple's employees say, we're not coming back. We're not coming back. The knowledgeable people at CDW really get what it takes to keep your business productive and protected. They understand that while your needs may change, securing your hybrid workforce never will. That's why CDW works with Intel and can help design a secure remote management solution that works for you with Intel's vPro platform, powered by 12th gen Intel Core processors and custom configured by CDW. You get hardware-based multi-layer security that will protect against threats. But Intel's vPro platform doesn't stop there. It gives you peace of mind for your business and business class performance all in one. Let's talk remote manageability. No matter where your hybrid workforce is working, management, IT, can access, control, and fix devices from anywhere, even outside the firewall, which means no matter where your teams are working from, you're still in control, still secure with vPro. And when you're in control and secure, life is better, isn't it? You can relax. Because with Intel's vPro platform powered by 12th generation Intel Core processors, your teams will be more productive and power through disruptions, letting you and your business focus on other things. For secure remote management and security, trust Intel vPro and IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it. Or should I say, people who get IT. Learn more at cdw.com/intel client. cdw.com/intel client. We thank CDW and Intel so much for their support of Windows Weekly. On we go with the show. Mary Jo out, but that's good because it means we get more Paul.
I will say this. This is an absolute coincidence, and I know we've been trained to think coincidence is conspiracy now, but there's a lot of Xbox news today.
Just completely by chance.
No, it's completely coincidental.
Completely
it really
coincidental.
Is coincidental.
Yeah. Just by chance.
Well, let's throw it out there.
Let's start with the new insider dev and beta builds.
Yeah. Right. So last week, they did this later in the week, maybe even on Friday, but Microsoft did release a new build, and they released it to both the dev and the beta branches, and same build. Now, the big news to me is the watermark is gone, right? And that means they're getting ready to finalize this thing. That's kind of interesting. So this is what we think of as Windows 11 version 22H2, right? The second version of Windows 11. Not a lot of new features in this build. In fact, I find this sentence to be really weird. This is how Microsoft described it in their little TLDR. This build introduces some new group policies for IT administrators and an update to the family safety widget. It's like two things that have nothing to do with each other. But normally I wouldn't care too much about new group policies for IT administrators, but then I looked at the list and I thought, this is interesting. And this is what I was talking about earlier when I said, this speaks to the ability of third-party utilities to give you like a one-whack approach to making these customizations. So for example, you can disable the quick settings flyout. This is that new interface that's very similar to what you see on Chrome OS on the Mac, with the little, you know, quick settings for volume and brightness and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that thing. I didn't know you could customize it. It felt like it was built into the hardware.
No, this is, you can disable it.
Oh, even better.
Get rid of it. Yeah.
Oh, I
disable
like that.
The notification center and the calendar flyouts. This is what used to be called Action Center. Disable all taskbar settings, which is crazy because there's kind of only one, really. disable search across start and taskbar. That's actually very interesting to me. I hate search. Hide task view, which is something you can do manually now. Block customization of the pinned area in start. Interesting. Hide recommended. Disable start context menus, meaning when you right-click the start menu. And then hide all apps in start. Now, these are interesting. Now, these are obviously aimed at businesses, and the idea here
so
is
you have to have the pro version and group policy editor, or?
Well, that's the thing. So technically, if this is a like a
I think it's just a registry
policy,
a group registry policy setting.
Exactly. So this is something that third-party utilities could do for you if that's what you wanted. So, or you could, you know, the people will find the registry keys and give you this access. So, yeah, on pro or higher, you can go into the local group admin or local group policy command center, control center and a control panel. Jeez, I'm losing my brain. And do find these settings. But they're registry settings, or they will be. And that suggests to me that third-party utilities can make these changes. And there'll probably be more coming down the pike as well. It's interesting. These are interesting choices, you know. In some ways, it's like if you thought Windows 11 was like kind of limited now, these could be used to make it even more limited,
right.
Which is
lock it down.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
what
IT always wants to do, right? Lock it down.
Yep. Yep.
Can you still do downloadable little registry that you double click and it'll modify the register? So somebody could. On their page, you might say,
I just want to do this. Or you know,
could have
here are
a
the
bunch
five
of,
things I want to do. It's a script. You run it. It makes those changes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I install Windows, I install a registry key like this. I don't know. Like a little registry script, basically, that disables the cap lock key.
Yeah.
Because I'm a
me
gorilla
too.
And I'm
first
typing.
First thing I do.
You know,
no. First thing I do. I turn it into control.
Right.
So.
Right.
You could have a file or a set of files that had all those settings.
That's right.
So you don't need group policy edit, and it could be Windows Home, not just Windows Pro.
That's right.
So somebody's going to come along and do that. Maybe.
Yeah. And if you're a power user and you know, they're like, look, I know I'm going to bring this machine up, and I don't want these three things. You can have one little script. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. That used to be, maybe this is kind of Windows is changing a little bit to be a little bit more like for normal people, because it used to be there were whole blog posts with these settings and lots of little ways you could change the registry and stuff like that. And I feel like there's less of that. Is that?
Yeah. Well, like I said, so Windows 11 was kind of rushed out, right? So Windows 11 kind of appeared. I'm sure there was some number of group policies that administrators could set at that time. But this very clearly to me is they've gotten feedback. This is not something Microsoft just came up with, right? Clearly businesses have said, okay, you have some UIs that my users are going to find confusing. And I got to be honest, I don't want them screwing around with this stuff. Can we disable that? You know, and I think that's what we're seeing here is those capabilities. But like I said, I didn't think of this like days ago as we were talking. It occurred to me, you know, these customizations would be interesting for third-party utilities. You know, like we talk a lot about StarDock and StarEleven. But, you know, whatever. You could have an individual could write a little UI that has – you know, customized Windows 11 or whatever. So
I think
we're going to see stuff like that.
I like that. You know, suddenly this is why it was good that I bought this Dell, because now I'm paying attention again to all of these things where for a while I was just just ignoring it. But for instance,
I hesitate to mention this to you, by the way.
Uh-oh.
You had mentioned that the Dell XPS 13 did not come in a 12th gen.
It does now. It did the day after I ordered it.
It's okay. So you saw this. So this is the weird new version. It's called
I didn't want the track bar. Or
no,
whatever
that's
they call
the
touch bar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the only way you can get 12th gen.
As soon as I ordered the 15 inch,
we talked about
gen,
it. I swear to God, I stood
the
up, walked away, turned on my phone, and I was like, huh.
Next minute. Of course.
Like, should I tell him? And I'm like, no
that's my story of my life. But I knew from CES that they were going to ship this 12th gen XPS 13.
Yeah. What's it called? It's like XPS 13 Max or.
New.
Something. It's got some names. There's some name to it. It's a different name.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool, but I knew I didn't want the there's no trackpad. It's just you have to kind of know where it is.
Well, it's
great. instead of the function key row, there's this touch bar like Apple did. Except
that stuff's always worked out great. People love those.
Yeah, because you hit it by accident all the time. So unlike Apple's, it doesn't stand out. It just looks like it's just part of the metal.
Part of the machine. Yeah.
So I'm actually intrigued by it. I love my XPS 13.
I love these machines. I would personally get a 15.
I'm thinking the bigger screen.
Yeah. Yep. It's gorgeous. The bezels are like non-existent.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Where do
it's
they like put the camera on these, though?
It's at the top. It is at
okay,
the top. They fixed that a few years ago. Yeah. I mean, it's a garbage.
It's
camera,
not the up your nose. Yeah.
No. They fixed that.
Well, it'll go very well with the poor bandwidth on the cruise ship, so. That's right. Why do you look so horrible?
Are you calling from World War II? What am I looking at?
I am calling from the past.
keep turning the generator.
Microsoft Edge now has, I love how they've taken Edge, a simple, clean browser, and made it a Christmas tree of features. This one's a pretty
Christmas.
This is a pretty good one. I think this is one everybody
I will say, of the kind of end user features they're adding to Edge, this is the first one I've been like, oh, okay. And you see this in other browsers. You know, Opera does this, et cetera.
What is this? We haven't said yet.
Oh, so, I'm sorry. Right, sorry. You can't read my mind, guys. So Microsoft Edge is getting a built-in VPN at some point in the future.
It's is it like a real VPN, though, or is it like what Apple's doing with the kind of private relay?
It's not completely clear, and I can't test it. I actually specifically downloaded Dev to see this on two different machines. It's one of those things that kind of comes eventually, so it's not on either of my PCs.
Oh, okay.
It will appear in that settings and more menu toward the bottom. Here, the thing, it's there's a lot of questions. First of all, I'm curious, you're adding a VPN to a browser, which I sort of get, but then I think, well, why don't you just add this to the operating system, you know? I think, in other words, the reason I would use this is, well, I guess there are a lot of reasons, but let's just make something up, even though I know this doesn't technically work very well. I'm in Mexico. I want to watch Netflix. I want to watch my US Netflix. Actually, they blocked this, but let's just pretend this works. So I use a VPN of some kind, ExpressVPN, you know, VPN, whatever.
Yeah.
Realistically, what I really want from a VPN is a VPN that just works with this one thing, because most of the time I want the computer to work.
You can assign, you could say, when I run this app, I want the VPN to launch.
Yeah. And that, but that's an OS function, right? Or an OS level function. Right. Very specifically websites, you know, you can toggle it on and off. There's also a question around this notion of the amount of data you're going to use. So the documentation for it says that Microsoft will give you a free gigabyte of VPN data, for lack of a better term, every month. It doesn't say anything about what happens when you go over. It doesn't say anything about whether you can get more or pay for more. Uh-huh. If you have a Microsoft 365 paid account, will that be part of it? And or will they give you a higher limit? You know, there's no... It's just they're just starting to test it. So we don't really know. But I think the first thing I think, first when I see this, I think, good. Okay, here's an interesting feature. Good. I'm glad to see that. But then you kind of think past it and you're like, well, I almost wish this was like a Windows 11 feature, you know? Obviously, by putting it works across platforms. But I think this needs to be an OS.
Yeah.
OS feature, I think.
That's how Apple did it. It's not a full VPN, but the. In fact, you can't do the Netflix thing with it. But
you want a list where you say, look, I want it on all the time for everything. Or I want it on all the time for everything except for this, this, and this. Or I want it off all the time, but I want to use it for this. You know, maybe you're using like a financial service or something or whatever it might be. I don't know. So I have questions, basically. But it's early. This is not shipping and stable. You know, it's not out yet. But it's coming. So we've seen this. It's in dev. So it's, what are we on now? 6 weeks? 6 weeks? 4 weeks?
It's a third-party VPN they're using, or are they doing their own? Or
I have no idea. I can't see it. I don't know.
You don't know?
There's not a lot of information about it.
Well, we'll find out more when it happens.
Yeah, but it's coming. It just, I should say they're using Cloudflare on the back end. Microsoft built, they're using Cloudflare.
Yeah,
I believe Microsoft built the.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
So it might be a limited, more limited kind of a VPN, more like Quad Ones or Cloudflare Relay or something like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Edge, we're number two.
Also, asterisks only on desktop. So,
yeah, of course.
Well,
because Chrome's number one on Android and Safari's number one on iPhone. Because
that's right. So if you look at overall, or if you look at mobile, Chrome, Safari, right? That's the whole world. If you look on desktop, it's a lot more nuanced. This is Chrome, basically. I mean, everything else has 10% or less. The interesting things to me here are, A, that it did surpass Safari in the desktop. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but honestly, that's pretty good for Edge. I mean, just in the context of Edge. Also, double-digit usage share, right? It's at 10 point something, 10 very low. It surpassed 10% for the first time. If you look back, let's see what it says, a year ago.
Isn't that funny? So what is Chrome then? Is it like 99?
67. Okay. 67%.
All right.
What you have at the bottom is browsers like Safari, Edge, Firefox, and Opera, and then other, right, that are all single digit. Oh, well, Edge is now 10%, but, you know, a bunch of little things at the bottom.
Safari's number three, used to be number two, mm-hmm. because that's default, you know.
Yep.
And
yep.
Edge is default,
yeah, but, you
now,
know,
right?
But Edge was default in Windows 10, the old Edge, remember the kind of IE-based version of Edge, for lack of a better term, Trident-based version of Edge. And that did really poorly. It was horrible. And, you know, them basing it on Chromium, it's, you know, honestly, it's taken longer than I would have thought, but it seems like it's finally starting to pay off a little bit for them. So it's a good browser. I wish we had policies for Edge where we could get rid of all the crap. Like, I don't want collections. I don't want vertical tabs. I don't want, you know, whatever. I wish I could turn that stuff off too easily and have it stick, you know, that kind of thing, like have it persist. But we don't do that anymore, do we? We don't persist things.
No, because life is a constant moving river.
It sure is.
Yeah. And so is your browser.
That was a big Windows 8 feature. We're going to sync. You know, you're going to get your same lock screen. You're going to get your same desktop background.
I remember that was a big deal. In fact, that was your advice. That's what I followed when I set up my Windows machine. I made my Microsoft account, and I got all the settings in there the way I wanted it. And then I logged in, and whoosh, the machine was that way. And it was very cool. It was nice. All my machines. Right. The only thing I didn't like is that the desktop started syncing, and I didn't want the same wallpaper everywhere.
Yeah, you had to, if you were quick, you could get into settings if you knew where to go, and you could turn it off before you could do that first.
Quick, I don't want that wallpaper. Now I do. I just do Bing everywhere.
Yeah.
Bing wallpaper everywhere. I got a big banner when I launched Firefox this morning. Version 100, they had fireworks, they had party hats.
Yep.
Chrome 100 came out, and I think 101, and now it's Edge 101. Mm-hmm. So they're following the Chrome numbering, I guess.
Edges, yeah. Edge. Well, you know, Edge is based on Chromium. They've adopted both the versioning and the release schedule, which, you know, whatever, that makes sense. I mean, these things happen so fast. When a new version comes out, they're not always monumental anymore. I mean, in the past, they used to be a little more significant. But as this thing gets faster and faster, obviously, that starts to change. It's funny, actually, I mentioned I wish I had extensions for Edge. One of the new features in Edge 101 is some new policies, but they're nothing particularly interesting. You know, set the default policy, you know, for people who have like a personal and a work-related account. For end users, the big thing with 101 is the ability to launch progressive web apps from the favorites bar. So it's just a... You know, they're just adding app icons and stuff. They're just making it kind of prettier. They've been doing kind of low boil. Look, you know, PWAs is still a thing we promise stuff, you know, for a little while now. So, but mostly it's policies, none of which are particularly interesting to me anyway. It's like the office menu. Well, I mean, like, you know, the new policies in Windows 11, I think those are actually really interesting. The new, you know, swipe gestures in Edge kiosk mode.
Okay. Kiosk mode. Ah, yes.
Yep.
A favorite of Las Vegas marquees everywhere.
I used the kiosk mode Chrome OS thing at Costco today.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really need to use it. I was just fascinated that it was a thing.
How did you know it was Chrome OS?
It said, how did I know?
It said inside.
No, it said it somewhere. Yeah, I saw it. It said it somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, vertically oriented there, portrait oriented.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I wanted was sold out. That's what I found out. So a good thing I went to Costco. it was fun.
Were you looking for, I don't know, party chips?
No, I was looking for a mattress. I wanted to see if I could try it out, but all they had was little mattress wedges.
I think I know where I can get you a mattress, Paul, if you really want.
Okay.
Oh, you need a mattress for Mexico City, probably.
Well, I do. I need a mattress for home. This was for home.
For home, okay.
I think mattress in Mexico City will be a local. Well, they have Costco actually in
Mexico. I wonder, do they have mattress and box companies in Mexico City?
They must. People
they
sleep
must,
in Mexico.
Right?
It's a thing. they're kind of famous for it.
If not, I see a business opportunity. All right, Mary Jo's not
heard
here.
Of a bed? They're pretty good.
I have slept on rope beds in Mexico. You know, you have a pallet on a ropes.
No, that's no good.
On a frame?
I don't like that.
No. I was telling Abby this when she's her 30th birthday, but when she was not even one yet, we went down to Mexico and we stayed in a what they call a palapa, which is a a hut in a tree, basically.
Yep. I'd be so scared of that.
Didn't have any windows, and it said, "Be careful of the monkeys; they like to steal things."
I love it. Oh, I need. What part of Mexico was this?
That was Zihuatanejo. It was beautiful, though. Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah, we didn't. We stayed there one night, and all the noises and rustling scared the hell out of me, especially since we had a baby in a playpen.
Right.
You know, or crib right there.
You know how the Tarzan story started?
Yeah, it was like being in Tarzan, literally.
Right. Yep.
And my wife was very pregnant, so we had to climb all these stairs and steps and ladders to get into it. So we went down to the beach and found a nice place. And that was that.
We spent one night with the Ewoks.
And one night with the Ewoks is all. It's like a year in any other place. I think that's a Murray head song.
Oh, boy.
Microsoft 365. There is no Mary Jo Foley to do that today. She's probably thinking it right now as she sits in that jury box. I'm going to make you do the Microsoft 365 update.
Yeah, I don't mind. People watching this or listening to this might actually remember back in the day, Microsoft had the ability to switch between, probably at the time, it was like Windows Live accounts or Windows Live IDs or whatever, in the browser. So you could have multiple accounts. So if you were looking at like Outlook.com, you go to the top and say, now I want to look at my other Outlook.com account. Or actually, you know, again, it would have been Hotmail or whatever back in the day. But you could actually switch accounts like right there in the browser. It was kind of nice. And then they got rid of it for technical reasons, whatever. But they are now offering the ability in the Office web apps. So this is like Office.com. So the web versions of, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and I guess OneNote is included, but OneNote's technically somewhere else, but I think it's in there. You can actually switch between accounts. And this is good because a lot of us have multiple accounts. We have work and home accounts. And, you know, a lot, there's all these like stupid tricks and tips, like you use two different browsers and you can have one for this account and one for the other account. Yeah, but now you can seamlessly switch between them. So, you know, it's like we're in the 21st century again. So,
what is technology? Is there anything it can't do?
Well, you can't design a good start menu, Leo. I can tell you that. It's that is a hard computer science problem.
Oh, it's tough. All right, let's take another little break. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley has jury duty. I'm hoping she'll be back next week. On the other hand, Paul's going to Mexico City next week. He'll be here. He'll be here. The whole house of cards is built on the notion that Paul can do Windows Weekly for me.
Don't say house of cards. I want it not to be a house of cards.
The whole phantasmagorical. It's made out of concrete. All right, good. All right. Yeah, because there are earthquakes down there. Reminder once again, couple of cabins left. Can you imagine? Some evening, you've got your favorite adult beverage
through the wall.
You know, Paul and I sitting there, we're talking about things like this, and you're you're there with us, sitting there. We're enjoying life as the glaciers go by.
Someone just to walk up and smack me right in the face. God knows I deserve it.
Nobody's going
to
do that.
This is thanks
you're
for telling
Chris me. Rock. That's not going to happen. That's not. People are going to be very. You're going to be actually. Have you ever done? I mean, I know we've done meetups in bars, but have you ever spent a week with fans?
No.
I'm telling you, there's nothing quite like it.
The next trip, we'll just go to your house. We'll just stay there for a week, you know, out of there.
I really enjoy it. There's about 100 people so far. I think we have room for another 20. But I love it because you really do get to know people. And if you want to know, you know, everything good and bad about what you're doing, this is the way to find out.
This is the way.
Yes.
Wow.
It's cruise.twit.tv if you want to go.
I don't know if that's selling it that much, but yeah.
July 16th through 23rd. Too late, Paul. You're booked.
I know. I'm in. I'm locked in now.
It's kind of fun, as is Rich Campbell from Runners Radio. He's paying his own way. He's just going.
Yeah.
And Gabe is coming. Raphael, rather.
Yeah.
I always confuse Rafael Rivera and Gabe Rivera, but they're two different people.
They are two different people.
Yes. Rivera is tech meme Rafael.
Also, I insist that his last name pronounced Riviera, but he doesn't like
it. Mr. Riviera will be joining us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Please come. We really would love to have you. Cruise.twit.tv. Our show today brought to you by Melissa. Poor data quality can cost organizations, on average, $15 million a year. A year. The longer poor quality data stays in your system, the more losses you accumulate. To ensure your business is successful, your customer information has to be accurate. And you know where you go? Melissa. Melissa is a leading provider of global data quality and address management software. It's not just me who says that, by the way. Melissa is a constant victor in the enterprise battles. They capped off 2021 by reaching a milestone, 30 billion, with a B, North American address lookups in the year. That's the most they've ever had. Melissa's a huge success because they make your business a huge success. If you've got your customer address lists messed up, names change, of course, so do addresses and emails and phone numbers, you're not going to provide good customer service. If you address someone with the wrong name or you verify the wrong address and the customer's already frustrated, things can go from bad to worse. With Melissa, verify addresses, emails, phone numbers, and names for over 240 countries and territories. You can do it if you want in real time at the point of entry. Melissa has a variety of ways you can use it. Of course, there's an on-prem solution. You can even upload your contact list, address list to an secure FTP server. They'll fix it and you can download it again like that. But they also have an API and they have a SaaS delivery function. So you can actually incorporate it into your customer service software or your shop cart, that kind of thing. So you get the stuff right from day one. That's awesome. In real time. In fact, they even have apps now for iOS and Android. They're lookups apps. Look for those in the App Store. And you can actually enter in an address and get it corrected. A name, address, that kind of thing. Duplicate information is also a problem, right? You could send out multiple catalogs or multiple bills. That's embarrassing. Melissa's data matching helps eliminate clutter and duplicates, increases the accuracy of your database, and reduces postage and mailing costs. So you've got batch address cleansing, which can do a whole list for accuracy and completeness. They have identity verification. That's actually really great for security. It also may be required for your compliance regulations. It keeps customers happy, of course. Geocoding enrichments mean you could turn an address into longitude and latitude. Great for deliveries, things like that. Email verification will remove up to 95% of bad email addresses from your database. 37 years, Melissa has been the address experts. And with a renewal rate of 92%, you know people are very happy. The typical ROI for Melissa customers is 25%. And of course, they treat your data like the gold it is. They undergo continuous independent security audits to reinforce that commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance. They're SOC 2, HIPAA, GDPR compliant. And boy, their global support center offers the best world-renowned support 24/7. All you have to do is sign up for a service level agreement. They're the best. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned free. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, melissa.com/twit. Melissa.com/twit. We thank you for their support. Windows Weekly.
Sorry, I belatedly muted myself. I was laughing at a response on Twitter.
Oh, you weren't laughing at me? Okay, good. Well, no, I'm sorry. I feel better now.
There's nothing funny about Melissa Leo.
No, there's nothing to laugh about. Our fine sponsors are not jokes, Buster Thurrott. Not jokes at all.
That's right. That's right.
Let's talk about Maui. Wowie. Developer time.
Yeah, so my expectation, I think they've said this, is that Maui, which is .NET Maui, the multi-platform app UI, kind of basically the follow-up to Xamarin Forms, will RTM and be generally available either at or around build, which is happening in late May, so maybe 3 weeks-ish from now. But this past week, they released a second release candidate, yeah. And oddly, added a pretty major change to it, which is in addition to Windows, Mac, iOS, and Android, it now supports Tizen. It's basically Samsung, right? It's a Samsung platform. This is used on smart displays, phones, whatever, watches, I think. So you'll be able to write, you know, this is the dream, you know, it started with Java, like write once, run everywhere kind of thing. I've actually started looking at it, I should say. I still don't completely understand what's happening with this product. And the reason I don't understand it is because on Windows, they're clearly using what is basically UWP. And UWP, Universal Windows Platform, is basically the latest version of this kind of WinRT platform that started with Windows 8. It's a mobile app platform built into Windows that isn't really as full-featured as the, you know, the desktop frameworks we had from the past, like WPF, et cetera. Although it does have, you know, unique features related to, you know, mobile platforms, right? The ability to sleep apps, asynchronous file operations, and yada, 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 whatever. So, but this is at heart a mobile app platform, you know? And so I often talk about MAUI in the context of something like Flutter, which is a Google product. Flutter is interesting because it runs on more platforms. It's, I should say actually today, I believe it's Windows, Android, iOS, and the web, which is, you know, it's coming to the Mac. I believe it's coming to Linux, but I think the web is a big piece of it. And the ability to have, again, you know, like one app that can run everywhere is, you know, enticing. You know, Flutter is not a mobile app platform necessarily. It started as one. But, I mean, it has native desktop, you know, kind of features on those platforms, or it will. And this one kind of doesn't. And I'm not sure what to make of this. So, for example, I can't create my .NETPAD application in this, at least not in any way that makes sense. It's just not full-featured enough. So, I don't know.
It's nice that you have a test app so you can kind of really get a sense of
this.
It'd
be nice if I could use it.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, so I'm going to keep looking. I'm still very interested in it. But I'm confused. One of the confusing bits is WinRT and, you know, the Metro apps, the Windows Store apps, all the names we've had, Universal Windows Platform, is not really .NET, right? This is something else. It's .NET-like, but it actually runs outside of .NET. It's not a managed environment. .NET MAUI is part of .NET, and yet it uses UWP under the covers, and I don't quite understand. I don't know what's going on here. So I like the idea of a cross-platform .NET environment. I really like that idea. People, when I was writing the articles about the .NET pad apps, were like, oh, this is really cool. You should port this to the Mac or whatever.
Right,
it's like,
right.
I can't. You know, the .NET stuff that's available on the Mac is not this full-featured. So, it's pretty full-featured for what it is, but it doesn't have the, you know, the desktop framework capability stuff. So, anyway, it's still interesting. I'm going to keep looking at it. It's not 100% what I was looking for, but anyway, it's coming down. It's coming quick.
There's no perfect solution, I guess, at this point.
There is no perfect. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually. I wish there was. I really like the idea of .NET and C#, and I wish there was a thing that did everything. I don't know. There isn't.
Is it in the roadmap? I mean, is it their plan to do this?
Mm-mm.
No.
This is it.
Oh. No.
Now, Xamarin Forms started as a way. You've got to remember what the beginning of Xamarin Forms was. You're going to use C# and .NET to create apps that run on iOS, on iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone. All right. That made a lot of sense. You know, when Windows Phone was an ongoing thing and we wanted, you know, bring C# .NET developers into the mobile world, it made sense. Xamarin Forms was a third party solution. Originally, Microsoft ended up buying the company, obviously, and they brought in Miguel de Casa and for a brief time, some of the other people that were key players there. You know, it's messy. And there were a lot of issues. Certainly .NET MAUI is an improvement. I think we kind of maybe it's like a version 3 kind of type thing of Xamarin Forms, we might think of it. There's definitely improvements, but fundamentally it is a mobile application. You know, it's like there's an M in the name. You think, you know, mobile app UI maybe. It's multi-platform app UI, but it's really multi-platform mobile app UI maybe is the way to think of it. Like I said, I'll keep trying, but I don't know.
Why would you add Tizen support if you're not focused on mobile? I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't know.
it's
why
weird.
Why would you add Tizen before the web?
At all.
You know?
Yeah, before the web.
I should say Microsoft has other solutions for the web that are C# and .NET like Blazor. But I think...
Do those make PWAs?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can do that.
All right. If Apple would just give first-class support to PWAs, it would all be done.
I could not agree more. Yeah. And, you know,
but they're never going to do that.
It can be really frustrating.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I use GitHub.
I do, too.
And, of course, I turned on 2FA, but it's...
You are in the minority, my friend.
Is it really? Really?
This blows my mind. According to Microsoft, only 16% of GitHub users, I don't know if these are actually contributors or just users, are using one or more forms of 2FA, two-factor authentication. Only 16.5%. So what they're going to do, belatedly, this is kind of news from the, I thought this was what we were doing, but they're doing it by the end of 2023. They're going to require anyone who contributes to GitHub will have to enroll their account in two-factor authentication. I recommend you do this today. Maybe that should be the tip. There are 83 million developers who contribute code to GitHub. A lot of it is private. And if your account is compromised, your private code bases could be stolen. And, you know, give it to the North
Koreans.
I don't
want anybody to get my Emacs configuration, especially Kim Jong-un. I don't. Exactly. They do, of course, they do the, you know, six-digit code, but they also do single sign-on. In fact, that's mostly what I get now. You can choose, I guess. But when I sign into GitHub, it says, okay, now look at the GitHub app on your phone and approve, which is great.
Yeah, they actually, one of the figures they had, I think, was that it was something like 83 million accounts. I think 10 million of them have come on board in just the past six months.
Yeah.
And hopefully those accounts are, you know, doing the right thing, the new accounts, I would hope. But.
And now that Microsoft's become very generous with the free tier, boy, I mean, even if you're not a coder, just for backing things up.
It's like what they did with Clipchamp. You know, Clipchamp and GitHub are so similar. I think it bears further examination.
So, okay.
It does. I don't. I'm just kidding. but they did make the...
It's like what they did with Minecraft. They're good stewards. Yeah,
they are. They really have proven this. Everyone, open source people groan.
Oh, we're so nervous. Yeah.
Yeah, no. They're good at this stuff.
Yeah.
They're not so good at the start menu thing. But you know what? GitHub. Good. Well, although, you know, the Visual Studio tools for GitHub are actually kind of garbage. If you use GitHub, I strongly recommend understanding the command line interface because obviously you can do everything there. It is much more full featured. Even if you're using it as a
That's pathetic.
Code repository.
That's depressing.
It's like it was made by the Windows 8 team. There are three major steps you need to say you have code in a project and you want to update the version that's up in GitHub. There are three things you have to do. Two of them are in the UI. The other one is it's in the UI, but it's hidden. Like you have to know that to go do it. And I just don't understand what it's very frustrating. Anyway, I don't run into this a lot. I'm not a developer, but every time I do, I have to text Raphael and say, what was the other one? And he goes, okay.
You got add, you got commit. And then you got push.
Yes. And so it must be, I think it's the commit step. And when you commit, you have to describe what you're doing. They don't let you get away with not describing the change.
Well, that's right. You should have most, I think that's Giddy, really.
Yeah. It's probably the right thing to do. But, you know, a lot of times it's like,
I just want to push it up.
I just made a mistake. It's a typo. I don't have to describe this typo to the world. No, you do. You do.
There's an XKCD.
Describe your typo. Yeah. There's no escaping your mistakes.
CD on Git commit messages. Let me see if I can find it.
Oh, good.
Here you go. Boy, thank you, Google. The speed with which. Right. So this
you
is,
didn't ping that, huh?
No. Here it is. Oh, let me make it bigger, though. Wait a minute.
Less than 400.
Yeah. So awesome. When you first do your commit,
yep.
You go created main loop and timing control, enabled config. And then by the end of it's like, my hands are typing words. Hands.
Right. Yeah, because you're like, I just made a typo. I just want to you have to type something to do it. You know, you have to type something. It's like, that's beautiful. That's exactly right. In the beginning, you're very descriptive. You take it very seriously. And then you're like, seriously, I just want to get this thing up there. Yeah.
Yeah. We've all been there. We have all been there. All right. We talked about Microsoft's earnings last week.
Yeah. Yep.
But this was probably the busiest earnings week I can remember last week.
This is a stupid thing to say.
Everybody.
Tough time of the quarter for people like me who have to write this stuff. Oh, I'm going to do this in a different order than I took the notes. But just to level set this, remember, Microsoft, $16.7 billion of net income on $49.4 billion in revenue. So almost $50 billion in revenues. There are bigger companies than Microsoft, as it turns out. We talked about Google last week, for example. Amazon, $116.4 billion in revenues. It did lose $3.8 billion, however, if that makes you feel any better about that particular business. And they're blaming the challenges on the pandemic, the war in the Ukraine. And then they apparently, because of all the rapid growth that occurred during the pandemic, might have overbuilt. So I guess they're going to look back at that. They have supply chain issues, et cetera, et cetera.
I think that's kind of the story of this quarter, is all of that pandemic growth has slowed a little bit, right?
Yeah. And
that's the real story.
I keep saying here, like, guys, this was going to happen, right? Like, yeah. You knew the rocket ship eventually runs out of fuel. But
And
Amazon, this is not a company that honestly typically enjoys huge profits. The revenues are already always through the roof. As a retailer, especially, but they actually lost $3.8 billion. That's interesting. That's why Jeff Bezos jumped ship. He knew it was coming. Apple is coming up just behind them. Apple's about twice the size of Microsoft now, $97 billion in revenues, $25 billion in net income. Yikes.
That's like a 25% margin. It's incredible.
Yeah. I know I keep beating this to death. The iPhone, $50.6 billion in revenues, bigger than Microsoft. Just the iPhone. Like, yikes. And by the way, these are all much smaller businesses, but the Mac, the iPad, services, all those things together, just as big as Microsoft. Also wearables. But roughly equivalent to the size of Microsoft. And then we also have the hardware makers, right? So Intel, AMD, and Qualcomm, right? So Intel, these are much smaller numbers. It's kind of interesting. $8.1 billion in net income for Intel on revenues of $18.4 billion, actually a decline year over year. They still make about half of their revenues from PCs, so $9.3 billion in revenues. That business was down 9%. Their other businesses were up. So actually, this is the fall off from sales to PC makers. I think this is what we were just talking about. I think this is where we see it. Microsoft's Windows business typically isn't the great bellwether of the PC industry because they're selling licenses to PC makers. You will see softness there. There have been down years, obviously, for Windows as well. And if it's bad enough, you'll see that. But I think the first place you're going to see this is with the hardware makers. That said, AMD, record revenues in the quarter. They are $786 million of net income profits, essentially. Record revenues of $5.9 billion. Their PC business, which also includes graphics, so it's a little bit skewed there, but is $2.8 billion, which is, again, about half. So they're smaller than Intel, but I think they have the same basic mix as Intel does. And then Qualcomm, which powers most of the the mobile chipsets in the world, other than Apple. Net income of $2.9 billion on revenues of $11 billion. And that is a record. And by the way, a 41% increase year over year. Qualcomm's a little tough because their chipset sales aren't just what we think of as processors, right? Obviously, they make SoCs, but they also make other chipsets that go in a phone. So a lot of phones will have two or three Qualcomm chipsets in them. And then, of course, they make chipsets for other things like cars and Internet of Things devices, et cetera. But $9.6 billion, the vast majority of Qualcomm's sales come from chipsets, mobile chipsets. So $11 billion there, what was I say? So $5.9 for AMD and $18.4 for Intel. So actually, Qualcomm is, not as big as Intel, but they're kind of in second place of those three.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Not surprising, I guess, in a way. But AMD... coming on big.
Yeah. Coming on big. It's really Intel is falling apart is the real story there.
Yeah. But. I mean, AMD's the PC part of that business grew 33%.
Yeah.
They're doing good.
I have to think every single customer AMD adds is taken away from Intel. I mean, who else?
One thing I'm starting to see a lot is Lenovo does this, HP does this. The biggest PC makers are now offering either AMD, and actually Microsoft does this. Microsoft's a small PC maker, but they'll offer AMD versions of computers. They also sell with Intel chipsets. They also offer, in some cases, and this is more Lenovo, HP, computers that only come with AMD, right? So they'll be like, well, we have this thing over here that has Intel, and then we have this thing over here. It's a little different, but it has an AMD inside. I don't know. I mean, you'd like to think that both companies would be interested in competing fairly in exactly the same computer. And then you could have an apples-to-apples comparison. Well, which one's faster? Which one gets better battery life, et cetera? And we could do a little bit of that. But there's a lot more AMD now, I would say, in the mainstream PC world than there was just, you know, 2 years ago. There's no doubt about it. You see, every time there's a PC maker, you know, briefing about new computers, whatever, there's AMD comes up more and more.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that's happening. Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. All right. We are prepared for the highlight of the day.
I know.
Just hope that Mary Jo doesn't, like, get out early. Come on over. It would be hysterical if she joined us in the middle of the Xbox segment, wouldn't it?
It's almost a little less enjoyable because she's not here.
I know exactly what you mean.
In a weird way.
It's not torturing her.
It's not exactly the same without her.
Oh, you know? Well.
I'll call her and leave this part of the show on her answer.
That's a good idea.
You know, I don't
record
it. I want her to feel left out.
No, great idea.
I'm a friend. I'm not, you know, not trying to exclude her from anything.
Mary Jo, I know you missed it. So here's the Xbox segment from today's Windows Weekly.
It's actually a lot of Xbox news. Like I said, you know, so yesterday, I think it was, Microsoft finally, belatedly, launched Halo Infinite Season 2. So new maps.
Seems like Season 1 just came out.
Well, Season 1 launched with the game, right? So I don't actually agree with this, but the way they're supposedly going to do it is the seasons are going to be 3 months long. But because Halo Infinite shipped in such an incomplete state, they were like, you know what? We'll take Season 1, we'll go 6 months, and then we'll do 3 months after that. And then as this date approached a couple weeks ago, they were like, you know, actually, Season 2 is also going to be 6 months long. This is going to go for a while. Oh, actually, is that right? No, I'm sorry. That's not true. It is going to be 3 months long. But some of the things that were going to make it to Season 2 are now Season 3, right? So campaign split-screen co-op being one of the big ones. Actually, that's not true. Campaign network co-op and mission replay for August. Campaign split-screen co-op, we'll see. It's going to be – could be a while, you know. Forge, for example, is going to open. Well, Forge is the multiplayer map editor, right? Kind of a key part of the game. It will launch supposedly sometime later in Season 2. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I'm actually going to take a look at some of this stuff. I'm not super interested. I mean, well, new multiplayer maps are always interesting. One of the big things that's in this is a new Battle Royale mode, which I'm actually very interested in. I'm not a big fan of Battle Royale games. This is like Fortnite, PUBG, et cetera, Warzone in the Call of Duty world. Because typically what these games are is like one and done. You know, a bunch of people parachute down to some huge island. You run around like an idiot trying to find guns and stuff. You spend like 18 minutes. You don't see a single bad guy. And then
boom,
you're dead.
Yeah.
You know,
that's pretty much how I play.
And I'm not a fan of that. So what they have is a game mode now that's debuted with Season 2 where you can go into smaller maps. I think it's 18 players, if I'm correct. And you have 5 lives.
Oh, so that sounds like
fun. It's not
one
and done. Yeah, that sounds like that might be of interest. So I'm going to check that out. Catalyst and Breaker, the two new maps. King of the Hill. Last Spartan Standing is new free-for-all mode, etc. So there's a bunch of stuff coming. So or a bunch of stuff here. And then during the season, there'll be more. So they're just kind of, they were going to ship this thing a year and a half ago, supposedly. Remember that? We will be 2 years into Halo Infinite before we have everything that we thought we were going to get when this game launched. There's no doubt about it. But I will opine on that on another day. But there's a story there for sure. It is May 4th as we record this, so we've moved into a new month. So that means there's new Game Pass games and Game for Gold games with gold titles. Typically, Microsoft releases Game Pass games in two waves. They do the first half of the month and the second half of the month. So we have what's new in the first half. I feel like I've been doing a lot of this. None of these games do anything. I don't recognize most of them. Loot River, Trek to Yomi, Citizen Sleeper. It's like I'm just making up words.
Yeah,
like, come up with game name generators. Like,
yeah.
Iudin Chronicle colon rising. I have no idea what any of these are. I'm sorry. I know I'm old, but well, NHL 22. There you go. That's out. Just in time for the playoffs. I don't know. Good. That's good. That's
wow.
I know.
Almost all of them, though, are a cloud, which is nice.
Yes. Yeah, we're starting to see a lot more of that, which is, that is nice.
If you've been wanting to play this War of Mine final cut, you finally can.
I know. It's like, what is it? I don't even know. So Games with Gold is falling into the kind of the same category. I actually do recognize most of these games. I just don't care about most of them, so unfortunately. So the beginning of the month, we're getting Yoku's Island Express, which is an Xbox One game. And then from the Xbox 360, this one I played a lot of it back in the day, Hydro Thunder Hurricane, which is like a boat racing game. That was awesome, you know, a million years ago when it was new. But whatever, you can get it for free if you're an Xbox Live Gold or Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscriber. And then Viva Pinata,
which is actually pretty fun, believe it or not.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. I believe
you remember that?
Yeah, I remember the original one.
From 360 days, yeah.
Yep, yeah. And then The Inner World, which actually looks, the last mug, I should say. That might be interesting, kind of an adventure game. That might be kind of fun. But anyway, they're free. You know, they're freebies. Let's not get too crazy here. The May update for Xbox is out. There's only two updates to this whole thing, and they different platforms. So there's a new activity feed on mobile. So if you're using the mobile app on iOS and Android, you'll see the new here, because everything has to be Instagram now. Every time you post like a game clip or video or whatever, that's called a story now. So get used to that language, whatever. And then on Xbox consoles, which is Xbox One, Series X and S, there's a quality of service tagging service. There we go. I know I could get that out. It's buried in settings, but the idea is you can choose between the things that you want to get preference. Obviously, the big things are multiplayer gaming, console streaming, or oddly, party chat. Party chat is a bandwidth hog. Because, you know, when you're trash talking with your buddies playing on Friday night with beer and pizza, you got to get that, you know, you want to make sure the latency's not there on that part of the experience. So that's out now. We have highlighted only one of these new controllers, but there's actually a bunch of new Xbox wireless controllers out. There's a deep pink version, which Lauren has written about on my site. My favorite one, I don't really know the actual name of it, but it looks like a Scottish kilt. So it's like a forest green with black. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's like it's really nice. I might actually buy that one. It's beautiful.
I like the translucent one. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Obviously you can go to the Xbox Design Lab and design your own, right? But
it's sold out, of course.
Every month,
the one I want is sold out, obviously.
There's a lot of nice controllers now, so that's been happening nicely. If you missed this, as you may know or you may not know, Microsoft had purchased Bethesda. And E3 is coming in June. No, actually, it's not coming. That's
E3
the problem.
Is so not
there's no
coming.
E3 in June. Yeah. So in lieu of that, Microsoft is going to have an Xbox and Bethesda game showcase. I guess all by their lonesome, which actually, honestly, even when there was an E3.
They did
anyway.
They
were doing that anyway, right? They were doing their own thing. So they're going to start talking about the new lineup of games that's coming soon to Xbox, not just from Bethesda, but across Xbox. So that's going to happen on Sunday, June 12th, which is a really E3 kind of time to do that. Because why would you do something on a Sunday in June?
Yeah, they must have been planning it. E3's gone, but it doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, this is going to be a virtual thing. Like, what's the right. Whatever. But right. Anyway, they're keeping to that, and that's fun. And then finally, the company that owns Tomb Raider, which is called Square Enix, is selling a sub-studio that created Tomb Raider and some other games, right? To another company I've never heard of called Embracer Group. This is a game, the Tomb Raider games have sold, if I remember the number, over 80 million units over its lifetime, you know? I guess it's 88 million. I just saw the number. 88 million. And it's like, why would you sell off such a successful franchise, you know? They're not really explaining it. I bet there's a lot of cost. Game studios are like movie studios these days. I sort of joked about this on Twitter that, you know what else sold at 88 million units? The Walkman. You know, like that's not necessarily a hugely popular thing these days either. It might be that the best days of the Tomb Raider franchise are behind it. Yeah. Much like it might be that the best days of Call of Duty are behind it for all I know. I mean, it's not going so great. But I thought that was kind of interesting, and I was mostly interested that I don't even know who this company is. Embracer Group. It's a Sweden-based holding company that has also acquired Gearbox, which is actually pretty famous, and Saber Interactive.
You know what they're buying is the intellectual property. They're buying the right to do movies. Yeah.
We're going to get Tomb Raider spin-offs. Serial. Yep. You're going to see Tomb Raider characters in
That's
Fortnite.
What they're buying.
It's going to be stuff like that.
You know? Yeah.
So not super exciting, but
I guess what it means is no more Tomb Raider games. Not that
I thought we were gearing up for a new Tomb Raider this year. I think that's been in the news. I thought there was a reboot coming.
Maybe that's what they thought there was.
Yeah. Maybe the problem was, maybe the deal was like, this is going to cost us a lot of money. It's like making a blockbuster movie. Like if this doesn't fly, like we're, you know, this
is expensive. Sure.
Yeah. Maybe.
Unlike a movie, you have to keep updating it.
With a movie, you're done when it premieres. How nice would it be just to put something out the world and just have it reap?
It's over.
Revenues for the rest of your life. Yeah, it'd be so great.
Yeah. Instead, I keep having to come in and do Windows Weekly.
Yeah, no, we both chose treadmill jobs, you know.
Because we're covering breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
I'm sure Mary Jo, wishes she'd been here for this, but I feel like you rushed it a little bit. Do you want to try a little bit more leisurely pace? Do it one more time. No.
The Xbox?
Yeah.
Well, I just... Yeah, no.
I think you, even though she's not here, you kind of feel like...
I do feel... I don't want to lose her attention there, you know.
The back of the book coming up. I don't know. We're going to do some... we're not going to do beer. Yeah. We'll do a cocktail, I guess, instead, yeah?
This might be the best one ever.
Can't wait. Something to bring on the boat.
I didn't think it could get any better. It got better.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. That looks good. But before you look at that, I want you to look at this. This, my friends, this little nondescript black box about the size of a paperback book. This is not just a piece of plastic. This is a honeypot. This looks to a bad guy like something really juicy and something they want to attack. But the minute they do, this canary in a coal mine is going to let me know there's somebody on your network doing bad things. This is the Thinkst Canary. And it is a very important part of your overall security strategy. Here's a stat that's going to scare the pants off of you. On average, companies do not even know they've been breached for 191 days, more than 6 months. 6 months that the hackers are wandering around in your network, downloading things, investigating. You see, when they get in there, maybe they're thinking, I'm going to put some ransomware on here, but they don't do it right away. No, no, no. The new thing is you download anything that could be compromising, because then you can blackmail them over that. And then look for all the places they store their backups and their recovery tools, and make sure you make a note of that so that when the ransomware hits 6 months down the road, you get everything. Is that scary? That's a terrifying thought. This little box is all you need to prevent that, because as the attackers are wandering around looking for resources, these little honeypots look valuable. You could put them on Active Directory, so when attackers browse around for file servers or looking at file shares, looking for documents, they're going to see this. They're going to say, and this can pose, by the way, as 100 different things. It can be a server, a Windows server, a Linux server. It could be... In this case, mine's a Synology NAS. It could be a router. It could be a switch. It could be a SCADA device. It could be anything or everything, just depending on what you want it to be. The other thing that Canary can do, which is great, is create Canary tokens. These are files. They look like Word documents or PDFs or spreadsheets that you can scatter across your network. They look completely normal. You can name them enticing things like payroll information or employee social security numbers. But the minute an attacker opens them up, you get an alert. Now, no false positives, just alerts when they matter. This is the way a honeypot should be. Easy to implement. It's quiet on your network until somebody's there and it lets you know immediately. It's like a tripwire. You spread out all over your network. tiny little tripwires you could put anywhere in your system. You can install a Canary and configure it in minutes. I was able to do it very simply. You get a Canary console when you buy a Canary or two, and they let you say what you want it to be. The MAC addresses look normal. The login pages look exactly like the real thing. Hackers have no idea. There's no way to know. Because the Canary was created by people who have trained companies and militaries and even governments on how to break into servers. And the knowledge that they have, they took and they built the Canary with. You'll find Canaries deployed all over the world. One of the best tools against data breaches. You can visit canary.tools/twit to pick yourself up a Canary. Big banks might have hundreds, small enterprises, just a few, a handful. As an example, you want five of these. Spread them around on the network. $7,500 a year. You get your own hosted console, you get upgrades, you get support, you get maintenance, you break the Canary, they send you another one, no questions asked, right away. And if you use the code TWIT, T-W-I-T, in the How Did You Hear About Us box, 10% off your Canaries for life, forever. Now, I know you're going to love your Thinkst Canary, because it's quiet until the time comes, and then it lets you know. By the way, you can do it any way you want. Email, text message. There's a console, as I mentioned. You can use it. It'll do it through Slack. It supports webhooks. So you can really pretty much do it with anything. Syslog, you can use that. They have an API if you want to get fancy. I know you're going to love this Canary, but if you are not happy, you get a 2-month money-back guarantee, full refund. If before 2 months you don't want it, you're going to want it. You're going to want it. Even though once you put it on your network, once you set it up, you just forget about it. But boy, if somebody gets in your network, they're going to see it because they look valuable. They don't look vulnerable. They look valuable. And you're going to get that alert, and you are going to be so glad you listened to me. Canary.tools/twit. Don't forget, put twit in the How Did You Hear About Us box for 10% off for life. Canary, C-A-N-A-R-Y, like the canary in a coal mine, because that's what this is. This is the canary on the network. Canary.tools/twit. Offer code TWIT. Thank you, Thinkst. We love these guys. And we use them. Believe me, they are really, really good. Paul Thurrott is back because there's no one else to be back. He's the only one today. Mary Jo Foley, I'm hoping we'll not get a long, drawn-out trial and we'll be back next week. I hope, I pray. But let's get to the back of the book and your tip of the week.
This is a little self-serving, and I do mention this from time to time, but I'm mentioning it again because it's just about to wind down. So I've been working on this Programming Windows series, which is really the kind of the history of Windows for a long time. And I am in the Windows 8 time frame. I'm about to finish that. After that, it's basically 8.1, 8.1.1, and just the beginning of Windows 10. I'm going to go to 2015, so there's kind of 3 years left to cover of history of 30 years. And so it's getting close. I've written over 130 articles. I think the exact number is 134 that are in the series. I think I've already written the conclusion. I wrote something many months ago that might just be the conclusion, which is that Microsoft, multiple times, literally since 1995, came so close to just embracing the web and web standards and using that as the programming window model for Windows, and backed off every time and never did it. And they got so close so many times. And I feel like the name of that article, if you want to look it up, is called something like We Fought the Web and the Web Won. And, you know, they well-meaning, you know, beginning with .NET is a good example with the XAML stuff, which is basically like a declarative UI similar to HTML, which I understand what they were trying to do, but really should have embraced HTML. You know, Windows 8, they sort of embraced HTML, but they brought it in and made it proprietary. So many times they came so close, but it's getting there.
Really worth subscribing to the premium Thurrott.com. I am a happy subscriber.
These are long form articles too. These are usually in the 3,000 to 5,000 word range somewhere.
So
there. Not all of them, but
this is kind of like the way they make TV shows now. You know, used to be you'd make a movie.
That's right.
Used to be you'd write a book about the history of Windows, but how much better to write a series of articles that's as long as, or if not longer than a book, but you can digest in chunks about each subject.
Yeah.
This is your book.
I haven't done this in a while, but the other thing that's interesting about this format is that I can go in and add an article today that actually relates to something from stuff I was writing about 6 months ago. It's not, you know, it's not all linear, although actually most of it is linear. But and I hope to, when this is complete, what I want to do is go back to some people I know from the industry and, you know, people I don't know that were just players and kind of talk to them about stuff and get some Monday morning quarterback, you know, look back stuff. So we'll see what I can do there. But I'm looking forward to wrapping this up because it can be obsessive at times.
I think you've had fun doing it, though, right? I mean, it's really,
it is fun. Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, for sure, for
look
sure.
At, look at all this. Wow,
very time consuming.
Yeah, good stuff. It really is a book. It's better than a book. It's fantastic. Yeah.
I do get asked if I'm going to turn this into a book. I'd like to. You know, I'm not going to do this right away. I need, like I said, I need to step away from it. I want to talk to people. You know, now. And see if I can get some additional information.
Well, you already have interviews with Jim Alchin and Marko Sinovich.
Yeah, these are interviews I did back in the day. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is a ton of stuff.
I did an interview with Jensen Harris. I can't find that it was ever published. Jensen is the guy who worked on the ribbon for Office and then helped create the Windows 8 UI. And I have a lengthy interview with him that I figured, well, I'm trying to find. I mean, where's the published version of this? I can't find it. I don't know that I ever published it, so that might be unique.
You started this 3 years ago, Paul. Wow.
Yeah. So what I did was I probably worked on it for 6 months-ish, and I hit the .NET era, and I took a break. And I waited about a year, and then I picked it up again late last year. And
wow. Started it June 14th, 2019.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's really great. Yes, everybody. Therot.com. Highly
recommend.
It's
important to remember anyone can start something, but the trick is finishing it.
No, you know what? I'm terrible at finishing things.
Yep.
You Everyone's. Are not. You
well,
are good.
No, I am too, but no. Yeah, I got this one, though.
This one you got.
Finish.
It was a labor of love.
Yeah.
The last 3 years. Awesome.
Well, you mentioned the After Steve book and there's the Tony Fadell book. We're in a time period now where there's a lot being written about.
Yeah.
Apple and Google and That's Facebook good. And, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. There's not a lot about Microsoft, you know, and certainly not a lot interesting. So this is interesting for me to go back and go through all this.
You bet.
Anyhow, you mentioned also Firefox hit 100. That was my app pick this week. This is, you know, despite it being version 100, is not a particularly monumental release, right? There's kind of additions to an existing feature called Picture-in-Picture, right, which is obvious what that is. Pop-out video players. It supports multiple pop-out video players, and now it supports subtitles and captions in those PIP windows. I don't have it hanging here, but there was a full-page ad in the New York Times when Mozilla split this thing off and made it, and we were looking for donations. Mm-hmm. If you grab a magnifying glass, my name is in there. I contributed to it.
Good for you.
I was using Firefox when it was called Phoenix, you know, and it went through different permutations, because they split it off from that communicator suite when Mozilla happened, right, when Netscape kind of spun that off. And I don't use it regularly. It is one of the browsers I use. I kind of go in and out of things. I do use it, by the way, I use it every single day. Actually, I do use Firefox every single day, but I use it on the iPad.
Oh, interesting.
I know.
Which means
weird.
you're really using WebKit, unfortunately.
I know, but it's syncing with all my Firefox.
I use
data.
Firefox on every, that's my default browser. I use it on every single platform, Windows, Mac, Linux. Well,
I use Firefox for password on iPad. So when I have to sign into a cert anywhere, it actually goes through Firefox.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, I'm a big fan. I'm going to show you something that Steve Gibson taught us that I think is new in version 100. If you do about config, which is, of course, where you get to the really gnarly, in fact, they even say proceed with caution, the gnarly settings for Windows, and you type global privacy. This is a new standard that's being used in the EU, but also California is doing it. I think it's global privacy without a gap. Yep. One word. You'll see three global privacy settings.
Oh.
And I've turned them. They're by default. They're all false. This is the new do not track.
Is this on by default in Europe or is this something?
Right now, I guess they're testing it. It is going to be part of the European protection laws, It is part of California, and that means because it's got a penalty written into law, there's some hope that, unlike Do Not Track, people will honor it.
Mm-hmm. And you could fine for every instance of violation.
Yeah, there's a huge fine. So yep, you just there's a little flip button that you flip the setting to true. Mm-hmm. I think there's two. I see. The third one is added, was privacy, global privacy ever enabled? That's automatic. But just turn those on Firefox 100, about, colon, config. And very nice. Now you're requesting any site that you visit, Do Not Track Me, and they have to honor it. Apparently, Steve was very excited because there's never been any teeth in Do Not Track. So right. this is a good thing. And then you can, if you want to see if it worked, if it took, go to the site globalprivacycontrol.org. And you'll get the GPC signal detected right at the top, so you can see, you know, what signal you're setting. It also explains what global privacy is all about, and so forth. So I'm hopeful. We're hopeful. If you believe in privacy,
yeah, I wish more people did.
Another reason to use Firefox. You know, every time I try the other browsers, and I've tried them all, and you got me on Vivaldi for a while, and I was using Brave for a long time, and so forth and so on. But I always go back to Firefox because it syncs, everything's in there. And I want to support the browser ecosystem that is not a monoculture. It's not all Google all the time. Okay. Let us... I think it's time for a cocktail. I don't know about you.
Yeah, so as a bit of background, one of my weird little habits is, aside from the fact that, you know, orange juice, as we know it here in the United States, is just as bad for you as cola because it's sugar.
Yeah, it's just sugar. Sugar water.
I've always found most juices to be too cloyingly sweet and kind of thick. Mm-hmm. So on those rare instances when I drink something like orange juice or apple cider, for example, I will actually pour the glass half full, and then I'll fill the rest of it with cold water and mix it up. And it just makes it more of the consistency that I'm looking for. It's not as sweet, right? Obviously, it's watered down. I really like I don't drink any juice regularly, but that's how I drink juice. And everyone thinks I'm an insane person. And then we go to Mexico.
And that's how everybody drinks it. What I discover is
there's an entire country of people drinking juice this
way. In fact, I found this out when we were in Oaxaca. If you ask for agua, which you think is water, they're going to give you agua fresca, which is juice. But it's the best.
Literally, they take a fruit and they blend the thing up, and I guess they add water. I don't know exactly. My wife knows that. My wife makes these at home. So since we...
You know what I make? I make, I don't know if you had this when you're in Mexico, but I make Jamaica agua fresca, which is hibiscus. And it's so good.
So my favorite is that it's melon or cantaloupe, right? The orange fleshed melon.
I like the watermelon. Right? Lisa loves watermelon.
So that's my wife's favorite. So my wife has been buying watermelons and melons. I think they're called melons.
Right? Delicious. Yeah.
Ever since last summer, like she makes these drinks.
Yeah.
Like it's just water. And so
good.
It'll be like the middle of the afternoon. I'm parched and I'm like, hey, could you make an agua fresca? We have that Vitamix blender that sounds like a jet turbine.
Yeah.
Disintegrates these things. Beautiful. These drinks, they're perfect.
Oh, so
they're exactly like what you get on the streets of Mexico.
I need her recipe for making watermelon agua fresca.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. So, but for the past couple of weeks, she turned these drinks into cocktails. So basically it's like an agua fresca, but with two kinds of rum, and it is very clearly an agua fresca. Like, it's awesome. These are awesome.
It's an agua fresca that puts you under the table.
Yes. Yes. Which might be what you're looking for on a Friday night. So
this looks good. Oh, does this look good?
Half a cantaloupe. Yeah. Four shots of coconut rum.
Yep.
One shot of dark rum, and then some ice cubes. Blended the thing all together. It's unbelievable. And we've done both the cantaloupe and watermelon. And I actually normally don't like watermelon that much, but watermelon in this form is
so excellent. Delicious.
Yep.
Malibu is pretty light alcohol, but you could use Bacardi 151 if you really want to get smockered.
but in keeping with the
light nature of the original drink,
right?
It not very alcoholic. Yeah,
it really feels the same. Like, it has the same light kind of feel to it, which I really like.
I'm making that tonight.
Yeah, this is good stuff. I think you're really going to be impressed by this.
Delish.
Yep.
The agua fresca, and it's in the show notes. Mm-hmm. It's on the screen, but if you're just listening, a half a cantaloupe cut in 1-inch chunks, 4 shots of Malibu rum or some other coconut rum, 1 shot of dark
Mexican
rum.
Flag up there in the.
Yep.
In the
yeah, there it is. Yep. It's Cinco de Mayo tomorrow. 4 to 5 ice cubes, which is an American holiday, but that's okay.
See, Leo will know this. Yeah, but Cinco de Mayo is a holiday in Mexico.
In Puebla.
But most people think it's like Mexican Independence Day.
No.
And it's not. There is a celebration. It's in a particular area of the country. It's because they defeated the French.
In Puebla.
Which most people would think the French, what were they doing in Mexico? But you know what? You know what the French left behind, by the way?
What?
Baguettes. There are some of the best bread I've ever had in my life is in Mexico.
In Oaxaca, we had amazing croissants and other French baked goods.
And when I started researching this country, of course, you're thinking like, you know, tacos, Mexican food, whatever. And people kept talking about these tortas, which are sandwiches.
Oh, I love
it. And I said to my wife, literally, this is almost an exact quote, I'm not going to Mexico and eating a freaking sandwich. But then you go to Mexico and you see these sandwiches and you're like, oh my God, they're amazing. Because they're on like the best French bread, like imaginable.
So if you,
picture a sort of like the type of stuff you might have in a taco with that awesome Oaxacan white cheese,
queso.
The best.
Oh, okay.
I should buy a place.
Let's go to Mexico City. Oh, you're going. Yeah. Oh, I'm so mad at you. Let me know if the penthouse is still available.
Okay.
I might just buy it myself. Say, Lisa, you can come with me or you don't have to, but I'm on my way.
Live shows from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do that, but I demand the use of the
You can
patio.
We'll share the roof with you.
It's unbelievable. The view from there is amazing.
You'll be like the Mertzes.
The Mertz. Okay.
Ricky, Fred and Ethel are here. Let's go up to the roof.
Why were their neighbors were like 80?
I know.
What was like, or the guy was.
If you watch Being the Ricardos, that movie, Ethel is Vivian Vance constantly complaining. She says to Lucy, I'm 1 year older than you. I'm married.
It's like an 80-year-old guy.
To this old guy.
I know. He must have hated that. He must have been so
unhappy. You haven't seen that movie, obviously. It's the only good thing about Being the Ricardos. It wasn't a great movie, but...
Okay. Is this the one with, what's her name, Tom Cruise's
nose? Nicole Kidman as Lucy. Yeah. That's actually the thing that's bad about the movie.
Because she doesn't look anything like Lucy.
No, and she does a Lucy voice, and it's very annoying. And as they said in the Academy Awards, how do you make a movie about... Lucille Ball without a single joke in it.
There you go.
I don't know. But the byplay between Fred and Ethel, and J.K. Simmons plays Fred Mertz. Fred Mertz is played by...
Fred Mertz.
Oh, I can't remember.
Can't remember his name. But he was an old guy.
Oh, yeah. It was a classic famous actor. I just can't remember his name. Anyway, J.K. Simmons is very good as him.
J.K. Simmons plays the old guy?
Yeah.
Because that guy's actually, I mean, he's older, but
he's old, but he's ripped.
Yeah, I know. He's in really good shape.
William Frawley. Thank you, chat room.
William Frawley.
William Frawley.
Interesting. That's funny.
Anyway.
Say that? Wait, how did that come up? How did this come up?
I don't know. How did it come up? How did it come up? No one knows. It's a mystery.
I think you said something like, oh, no, we will be Fred and Ethel is what you said.
You will be Fred and Ethel.
And I took umbrage with that because that guy was like 80 years old.
Okay. You're right. We'll be Fred and Ethel.
No, it doesn't really matter.
We'll be the Mertzes.
You
can be the Ricardos.
That was like...
Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason.
Yeah. To the moon, Alice. The Cramdons. Yeah, you want to be Norton. You could be Norton. Hey, Norton, come on. Let's go to the roof. Smoke a Cohiba. It'll be great.
Exactly. Look at the skyline.
Now, okay, if you get there and it's still available, I will $10,000 at a time. I will wire you the money.
Well, you'll have to do it 10 at a time.
It'll take
it's very
all
complicated.
Week. I know. I remember your story. Okay.
Very complicated.
You know, it's fun. It's like the old days. Me and Paul, just the two of us, couple of old guys. Norton.
I don't even remember
Ralph.
What's the woman's name again?
Who? In which show?
The one that's on this show with us?
Her? Ethel. No. Yeah, Mary Jo will probably. Yes. Well, we don't know I what kind of
back.
Trial.
I hope she's God, back. Can you imagine? Week. I hope not. I hope it's not something horrible.
Well, if she, you know, if it's a.
I assume she'll contact me soon.
I hear there may be an indictment coming down for the former president. It would be kind of cool if she was on the jury. I think that'd be interesting.
I don't. Yeah, that's not going to be
a. No, you don't think so? Okay. All right. My friend Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrogood.com. His books at the Lean Pub Organization, leanpub.com, including the Field Guide to Windows 10. Do become a premium member at Thurrott.com so you can read his three-year odyssey, Programming Windows. It's really a history of Windows. It's fascinating.
Yes.
From the point of view of the tools used to make software for it. It's really great. I enjoyed it a huge amount. And we will be back next Tuesday, as we are always, 11 a.m.
Wednesday.
As we
actually,
never are.
You know, actually, we are not going to be back on time because Google I.O. is next week.
Oh, you're right.
So we will be back Wednesday, but it will be whenever Google I.O.
After Sundar Pichai leaves the stage.
Yep.
So, yeah, so Google I.O. is next week.
What time does that start?
10 a.m.
So, yeah, it will probably be like within an hour, I bet.
You know,
I bet
it's unknown because they've they've done hour, you know, very tight, hour-long things when they were pre-recorded. They're back live with this one, and they have gone 2 hours in the past, so it's just really unknown.
It will be an indeterminate amount of time.
Jason Howell, Jeff Jarvis, and I will be doing the live play-by-play from 10 a.m. until the end, and then immediately after we'll switch right over. We'll do Windows Weekly. So come back next Wednesday, and it's usually sometime. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, sometime next. Watch Google I.O., 1800 UTC.
Yeah, I'll definitely be watching anyway. So
if you watch live, the streams, audio and video, are at live.twit.tv. Of course, the best way to do this is on your own schedule. That's why we make on-demand versions of everything we do at twit.tv. In the case of this show, twit.tv/WW. There's a YouTube channel with the videos from every show. You can subscribe in your favorite podcast player. And if you don't like the ads, there's a few ways to do it ad-free. You can, of course, join Club Twit. That would be my preference. $7 a month, ad-free versions of everything. Plus access to the great Club Twit Discord. Plus the Twit Plus feed with all sorts of stuff that doesn't make it into the podcasts. But you can also go to iTunes, and I think it's $2.99 a month. You can buy individual shows, including this one, ad-free. And I think we're doing it with Spotify at some point.
They're doing this now.
Yeah, and I think we are turning that on. I don't know if it's on yet.
Oh, because they do videos new. I think they just added
video. We can't do yet because the way they do video is you have to use Anchor.fm upload it. Yeah, so they don't have any love for RSS or podcasting. They just want to do it all inside Spotify. So. We still have the audio up there, and yes, you can buy, I think, we're going to, if we haven't done it yet, ad-free versions from Spotify as well. But those are onesie Tuesday. You don't get all the other stuff. Spend a little more. Spend a couple bucks more. Get the club. Twit.tv/clubtwit. And again, cruise.twit.tv. I know I'm flogging this thing, but I want to see you there because it's going to be so much fun. If you want to join us in July.
What are we doing on the cruise? I know we have a cocktail reception.
Let me check the notion.
The stuff, right? Like we have.
There's several things. So the first night, we have a cocktail party, a welcome cocktail party. And I think we're hoping that we can get.
This is our group, right?
This is just, our group, just the 100 of us or whatever.
Yep.
5 p.m. welcome cocktail party at B.B. King's Blues Club. We're hoping that we can get some fun stuff for you there. I want to get badges.
Like some Wi-Fi packages.
No, nothing that good. No, I want to get you badges so we know who you are. The next day, Sunday, we're going to have a group meeting. That'll be you
point,
and me.
We're all going to be tired of being on the ocean.
No, it's the second day, man. So you and I, you may be a little seasick.
It's a travel day. You know, this is like...
Yeah, this is a sea day.
Yeah.
So, but it'll be beautiful. We're not at sea. You'll be sailing by some beautiful stuff. So you can look out the window. But we'll do an event, you and me. And by the way, if Rich wants to join us, Raphael, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
You can all go up on the stage and tell us war stories about Windows or something.
Yeah.
And then there's the after Ketchikan, which goes on and on. There's a farewell cocktail party also in B.B. King's Blues Club. But that's on Friday. But every evening, I think you and I, I plan to find a
spot. Just be available like at a bar or something.
Yeah.
Or,
exactly. We're going to find a lounge where there's enough space that we can have a bunch of people. And so we'll just let you know on the first day where that's going to be. And we'll just sit there. We'll have drinks. We'll get inebriated before dinner. And you can join us.
Then you can watch me make a complete ass of myself.
Oh, it's going to be, I'm going to get Paul dancing on the tables. It'll be so much fun.
Yeah, karaoke night.
Shuffleboard at three. That's right, Chickenhead. No shuffleboard, sorry.
I better not see that band from the Titanic.
Nearer, my God, to thee. Thank you, Paul. Have a wonderful week. When are you leaving for Mexico? Tomorrow?
No, when am I leaving? Monday night.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, signing is on Tuesday.
I'm so excited for you.
Podcast is on Wednesday.
I'm not kidding. Text me. If they say the place is available.
Okay. I have a secret pact with your wife that prohibits me from doing anything like that, but
See, she doesn't know. That's the thing. I got to take her to Mexico City when she sees how wonderful it is. She's going to say, what, we can live here?
Breaking news, sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
Mary Jo has been dismissed from service, and she's free for 4 more years.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I can't wait to hear about her case.
She must have found guilty pretty damn quick.
You're right. That's right. You're guilty. I got to get out of here.
Guilty, I'm out of here. All right.
I think Lisa needs to see Mexico City. I think a lot of people need to see Mexico City.
I think you're right. Thank you, my friend. We'll see you next week. All of yous, all your doses on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com, in our new This Week in Space podcast. Every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out in your favorite podcatcher.